LBC 97.3.
Tony Blair.
Call 0870 9090 973.
This is LBC 97.3. I'm Howard Hughes, and I'm going to hand you over now to our host for the next hour, Tony Blair. Now, this is part of Labour's big conversation. If you have any bright ideas on how he should be running Britain, Tony Blair wants to hear from you now. You can call the Prime Minister on the usual number here at LBC 97.3. That number is 0870 9090973. Or you can email the Prime Minister at his own email address, tony@lbc.co.uk. You can also text him on 0771 776 0973. So if you think you've got a great idea to solve our transport problems, improve our schools and hospitals, or anything else that might cross your mind that could make London or Britain a better place to live in, here's your chance to make a difference. We're giving you a direct line to Tony Blair himself, and he is all ears this morning, I promise you that. Tony, good morning to you. What sort of ideas are you particularly looking for this morning? What do you think?
Well, it's all about how we build up to having a manifesto for the next election. And so, for example, on antisocial behaviour or issues to do with asylum, or it might be how do you pay for learning throughout life now? How do we get the right balance between what the taxpayer pays and what the individual pays? You know, changes in the National Health Service that we're introducing, how we make the economy, not just of London, but of the whole country, strong for the future. And that there are lots of difficult issues that the future poses to us, and the question is, how do you make a future that is fair for everyone, not just a privileged few? And that requires some difficult choices, and at least we think it's better to make those choices informed by what the public thinks rather than simply do it in the traditional political way.
Well, a lot of subjects to get through, clearly. Are you ready?
I'm absolutely ready, and thank you very much, Howard, for introducing me.
Okay.
And I'll do my best with all the technology around. And the first call is from Farzana in Stoke Newington. So,
Hi, Prime Minister.
Hello.
Hi. It was a question around higher education funding. I mean, I've been following the debates around higher education funding and obviously welcomed the government's proposals that were unveiled last week. I'm not entirely convinced that the proposals on offer will be adequate over the medium to long term to sustain sufficient funding within higher education over the medium to long term. And the question essentially is, why hasn't the government looked at perhaps introducing a graduate tax similar to the system that currently exists in Australia?
Okay. Farzana, first of all, let me just give you an answer to that, then ask you a question about it. I mean, what we've unveiled has got something of the nature of it's a sort of graduate repayment scheme, if you like. It means that people won't pay upfront fees at all now, but the student, once they've graduated, will pay according to their ability to pay. So, for example, if they're earning £20,000 after their graduation, they'll pay something like £8 a week back towards the cost of their fee. And then there's a cut-off date, so that if, for example, someone goes to university but then doesn't work after university, either for reasons of ill health or because they're raising a family, then the loan is then written off after a period of time. So we think that's a fairer system. What you're posing is this: do you put a specific income tax supplement on all graduates? And let me just tell you the reason why we didn't in the end go for that system, and then ask you what you think of this. The real difficulty is that if you put an income tax supplement on everybody who's graduated, then you may find people who, for example, simply took a two-year course, a reasonably low-value degree, but actually happened to earn a reasonable sum of money afterwards, would be paying a sum of money back into the system many, many times the amount that was actually invested in their education. And we thought people might find that unfair. So that's the reason we did that.
Right, okay.
And can I just explain to you, incidentally, on Australia, actually their system, in fact, although they call it a graduate tax, is really rather similar to what we're proposing.
Right, okay. I mean, I suppose, having taken on board what you say, my concern is that the proposals that you've unveiled still have an element of deterrence to them, in so much as you'll get some students from poorer backgrounds who will, in order to minimise the debt that they will incur once they've graduated and once they begin earning, will go and veer towards courses which actually are not that advantageous to them. over the medium and long-term career-wise.
Yeah, well, I understand that too, but that's why what we're also proposing is that there's a £3,000 a year support package for the poorest 30% of students, and we hope, I mean, that didn't always get the publicity it should have maybe last week, but we hope that that will mean that any student, because there's a £3,000 maximum fee, that any student from a poorer background will know that they can actually meet the cost of that fee. But, you know, the difficulty in the end, as you rightly indicate, is that someone's got to pay, and we just think there's got to be a balance between what the taxpayer puts in, and then to ask the student once they graduate, no upfront fee, but once they graduate, to pay something back into the pot.
Farzana in Stoke Newington, thank you so much for making history here at LBC 97.3 and for being our first caller. If you'd like to call the Prime Minister, the number that you need here at LBC 97.3 is 0870 9090973. You can also email tony@lbc.co.uk. Prime Minister.
Right, now it's over to Cathy in Hounslow.
Oh, hello, Prime Minister. Good morning.
Good morning, Cathy.
I emailed in this morning after listening to the programme about taxation. I work in the National Health Service. My husband is a civil servant. And we both pay quite high levels of taxes. I'm a higher rate taxpayer. And I suppose I sometimes feel like I'm just kind of working just to keep my head above water and for a sense of pride because I don't want to be dependent on the state. And you will probably ask me, what solutions have I got? Because somebody's got to pay the taxes. I'm quite happy to contribute to the economy. I think it's everybody's duty as a citizen to do that. But I certainly do feel that some of us pay extremely high taxes. I'd like to see more done about reducing perverse incentives that keep people at home, for example, where it's easier to be on benefits than to go out to work. And it's more, you know, there is more in your pocket if you do that. I'd also like to see more money invested in things like childcare, and I know there have been some recent moves to do that. And I'd also like to see, and that would allow parents, for example, single parents, mums who've been at home, to go out and work. And I'd like to see a little bit more done around flexible working, and that surely is about creating some kind of concordat with employers where they can allow people to work, do more work during term time or things like annualised hours. But I'd like to see the tax burden spread more evenly across the country rather than some people paying quite, you know, bearing quite a heavy burden and others very little.
Okay. Well, first of all, Cathy, I think there's a very reasonable points to make. I mean, the basic point you're making is, look, if you help more people off benefit and into work, then the economy would generate more revenue and then you could spread the tax burden more fairly, yes?
Yes.
Right.
So I'd like to see a bit more done about that, please.
Right, okay. I mean, just to respond to one or two points. I mean, first of all, the whole purpose of introducing the Working Families Tax Credit was to try and make sure that people, particularly if they've got a family, then it's actually going to pay them to go into work rather than stay on benefit. And one of the reasons why actually there's been around about 1.5 million more jobs in the economy in the past few years is because we've helped people off benefit and into work.
Yep.
And there's now a specific childcare tax credit. Mm. Now, where you are right, however, is that for some people still, it's the case that it pays to stay on benefit rather than going to work. Now, what the Chancellor said is that he will look for the next budget at ways that we can try and help more of those people off benefit and into work, because that's in everyone's interest.
Yeah.
And on flexible working, I think that is absolutely right, because some people will not be able to work a normal 9-to-5 job, but on the other hand, because, for example, they may have family responsibilities, but on the other hand, they would be very happy to do more flexible working.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do, I mean, the health service, for example, we're trying to get at such a concordat with the health service authorities there, mm-hmm. and I think we've got to try and extend that across the piece, but I totally agree. And yes, that is one thing that we'll be looking at in the course of this big conversation.
Okay, well, I look forward to feeling the effects of that sometime soon.
Okay, well,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cathy, thank you so much for your call. It is your call to the Prime Minister. He's looking for your thoughts, ideas and suggestions. As part of the Labour consultation exercise, the number to call is 0870 9090973. You can email tony@lbc.co.uk. He's even got his own email address. Or you can text at 0771 776 0973. Prime Minister.
Right. OK, the next call is, I think, from Stephen Sidcup.
Good morning, Prime Minister.
Good morning.
Yeah, but my suggestion is related to the effective means of collection of tax, which could lead to either lower tax or improved services. And what I'm suggesting is that you actually collect a taxation, or not just taxation, but council tax, TV licence, fines, you know, any payments from the citizen through the taxation service via the Inland Revenue. And using that sort of centralised, streamlined method, that would lead to a much cheaper and effective way of collecting those costs. And also the taxation service has got a certain degree of means testing built into it. So again, that's just a suggestion.
Right, so in other words, you'd use the Inland Revenue. I mean, the Inland Revenue obviously is doing a certain amount of the tax collection and so on, but you should use it to do fines and other things as well.
That's right, so you're using like one central means of collecting fees or, you know, money from citizens, if you like.
Okay, well, I can certainly listen to that. I mean, let me just tell you one thing that we're trying to do about fines in particular, because this is a problem with courts when they impose fines on people, and the fines aren't always collected in the way that they should. And as a result of that, over the past few years, the percentage of fines actually collected has declined. And we're now increasing those by trying to make sure that it's not just courts that go out and collect the fines, but they can actually contract out to other organisations the ability to get those fines so that people are actually chased up. And, well, I'll certainly look at the issue of the Inland Revenue. I don't know whether... one of the things, incidentally, and I hope you leave your address or contact number, one of the things I want to do with some of these questions is to get back to you and tell you exactly what, for example, the Inland Revenue might say about such a proposal, because they may have, I don't know, bureaucratic or principled objections to it. On the other hand, there may be something in it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the principle is to have, like, one book,
yeah, no,
if you like.
I understand.
The Inland Revenue was just a suggestion, because they're already in that position at the moment.
Yes, and also what is important is that everybody should play by the same rules.
That's correct.
And if we didn't have, I mean, in fact, the levels of the black economy here, fortunately, are less than they are in many other parts of the world. But even so, there's still a substantial amount of money that goes uncollected.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that suggestion, Steve. Right. Now, can I... this is me, I'm supposed to... It says Tony, but that's me. Right, more of your calls in a moment. And this is After the Travel News on LBC 97.3 with Natalie Bailey.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Well, we've got some problems if you're heading into town on the A10. Congestion from Tottenham Hale heading down towards Stoke Newington. And still looking at this accident on the A3 Guildford bypass coming London bound. Two vehicles involved in that accident. It's completely blocking off the road between the Wooden Bridge and the Woking Road interchange. Really hefty queue as you come into town with an extra 35 minutes onto your journey. For the London Underground, no Bakerloo line service between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wilston, and longer to wait for services on the Central and Piccadilly lines. LBC 97.3 Travel. Next update in half an hour.
Travel with eShore.com, bringing you cheaper car insurance online. LBC.
Want to ski low cost? Then why not hit the slopes with EasyJet? Fly low cost to the Alps or the Pyrenees with daily flights to Lyon, Munich, Geneva, Milan, and now Toulouse. All with our famous low fares starting from just $22.99 single. With so much choice, we've even given you an online guide to resorts, accommodation, and the latest snow reports. So what are you waiting for? Book online now at EasyJet.com. EasyJet, the web's favourite airline. Conditions apply.
Lucy.
James.
Steve.
Samantha.
Luke.
Rob.
Dan.
Samantha.
Julie.
Mary.
Simon.
Samantha.
Sarah.
Ken.
Liz.
Samantha.
When you hear 1 in 4, it sounds like a lot. 1 in 4 Lotto jackpots is won by a National Lottery Syndicate. If you want to start up a syndicate, just log on to nationallottery.co.uk or call 0845 910000. Players must be 16 or over. Games, rules and procedures apply.
A Formula One car is the perfect vehicle, unless...
You're taking Granny for a spin. We all like different speeds, so Tiscali Broadband offers a choice of high-speed internet. Up to 3 times faster than standard dial-up, or a turbo 10 times faster. Both have free setup and free modem. Call 0800 107 9000 or visit tiscali.co.uk to get broadband from $15.99 a month.
Another lap, Gran?
No!
Requires BT line in Tiscali Broadband area. Minimum contract and conditions apply.
Passengers are advised to remain seated.
Why cross the channel in a gale?
When crossing with Eurotunnel is a breeze.
With a journey time of just 35 minutes from Folkestone to Carrick-on-Kell, Eurotunnel is the quickest way to get you and your car to France, whatever the weather. For a channel crossing that's plain sailing, just visit eurotunnel.com or call 08705 353535. Eurotunnel. Inspiring possibilities.
LBC 97.3.
Call Tony Blair now.
0870 90 90 973.
Right, this is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3. I'm taking your calls on 0870 90 90 973. And the next call is from Kate in Holloway, near where I used to live.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I haven't got a specific suggestion. I've got a general suggestion, which rebounds on the specifics. You talk about having a society that's fair for all, and my suggestion is to keep going back to examining the policies against a system of justice that has proper integrity. I was listening to Nick earlier this morning, and the new policies about the motorists. Now, it seems to me absolutely unacceptable. And it would be, in a kind of general vision of the law, that one person who's broken the law should pay for someone else's crime. And it also seems to be unacceptable, again, if you take the logical extension of something like prison as a way of punishing an offence, that the point system, which is equally a way of taking people off the streets because they're deemed to be irresponsible, finally, and dangerous, finally, should be something that you can buy your way out of. And if those had been examined against a more basic system of justice, I feel they wouldn't have got through.
Okay. Well, those are fair points, Kate. I mean, first of all, let me say what was published yesterday is a consultation, and so the decisions haven't been taken yet, and we're obviously going to listen carefully to what people say.
Great.
I mean, I think the basic point you're making is one that I agree with, which is that criminals should actually pay compensation to their victims, and it should be the person who's committed the crime that pays the compensation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Now, there is, however, one problem with that, which I'll come to in a moment, but basically that must be right, and the courts have got the power to order criminals to pay such compensation. And one of the questions we're asking in this this conversation, in this consultation that we're having with people, is, you know, is it right, for example, that in circumstances where people are ordered to pay compensation and don't, that their earnings should be attached to the fullest extent and including their benefits, if necessary, in order to pay the compensation.
Right.
Now, I personally think there is merit in that, but some people will say to you, well, you're going to put particular families in poverty and all the rest of it. Anyway, that is one set of issues, and plainly, in principle, it's right that the criminal should pay the compensation to the victim.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the principle isn't right when one person is paying for someone else's criminal act, which is what seems to be suggested here.
Right, and what I'm saying to you is then that the problem that there is in circumstances where you get a crime where you either can't identify or convict a criminal, or we just simply don't know how that person came about being injured, for example. It could be in a hit-and-run accident. We know it was a crime, but we don't know who did it, and we're not able to identify or convict. Now, in those circumstances, the public pays compensation to that person, but you can't get the compensation, obviously, from the criminal because you don't have someone who's actually convicted. And the question is, how do you fund such a scheme? Now, as I say, what was published yesterday, however, is a consultation. It is just that. And we will listen carefully to what people say. But the basic point that you're making is, insofar as it is possible, it should be the criminal and not somebody else that pays the compensation.
Right. And as far as the second point is concerned, now, I understood the Points Act was to do with getting people who finally showed total irresponsibility by not taking on board speeding fines and the fact that what they were doing is dangerous, off the roads. But if you can buy your way out of that, is it not the equivalent to buying your way out of prison?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, the point system's been with us a long period of time, and if you have people who accumulate points because they keep on breaking the law, and okay, one of these crimes in themselves, one of these offences may not be that serious, but if you keep multiplying them and people are getting more and more points and they're not actually discharging their responsibility, what do you do in the end? I mean, you either have to take some sanction against them, or you have to make sure that you have a way of making them pay their fine. You see what I mean?
Well, the sanction is also to protect us. And taking people off the streets protects people who constantly speed off the streets, protects us, protects the pedestrians, protects people crossing the road, etc., and other car users. So it's not only it's something that if you can buy your way out of, you're not protecting us. And equally, if you're very wealthy, it means you can go speeding till the cows come home. I mean, you can just put two fingers up to the system.
Well, except that of course the court has always got the ability to say we're not going to give you another fine, we're going to ban you. So I don't think this proposal should be understood as meaning you can carry on getting fines after fines after fines, and provided you pay them, you can carry on accumulating them. I mean, the court's still got the ability, certainly as I understand it, to say to someone, well, I'm sorry, if you've done, you know, three very serious offences, then I'm afraid we're going to ban you. You see what I mean?
The Prime Minister is taking your calls here at LBC 97.3. 0870 90973 is your number, Tony.
Okay, anyway, we're going to move to another caller, and the other caller is Ron in Worthing.
Good morning, Mr. Blair.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm a father of two children, 13 and 10 years old, who I haven't seen for 5 years. This is because mostly the mother hasn't complied with court orders, and initially because of the default position adopted by the court, that upon separation, if mother says so, dad becomes an unfit parent. Now, there have been many, many false allegations which are used to prevent me seeing my children, none of which are proven because they're simply not true. And what I found very, very difficult to come to terms with, and in fact it's made me very angry over the years, is that this has all been financed by the Legal Services Commission to the tune of perhaps nearly £100,000 now. And I've won cases in many thousands of fathers who are trying desperately to see their kids. I can't understand why it is that a government department freely gives legal aid to a mother to make false accusations against the father, and father has to go to court repeatedly to try and prove his innocence, always paying for himself because fathers very rarely get legal aid, and even when he's found to be not guilty, found to be innocent of all these allegations, he can sometimes be out of pocket, and in my own instance, some £30,000. I'm living in a four-bedroom house, and I now dwell in a small rented room. I can't understand how this can happen to me and my children, and I'm concerned at what appears to be an attack on myself and my children by my own government. I think there should be a presumption to contact which would eliminate a father having to prove his worth in court, in the same way that a mother, you know, would be entitled to see her children on separation. Why is it dad suddenly has to go to court to ask permission? If there was a presumption to contact and shared parenting, then our fathers wouldn't find themselves in this position, and we wouldn't have the children's inheritance and our own wealth stripped of us by repeatedly going to solicitors to have to go to court to try and get, you know, a few hours a week to see our children.
Right.
What I would like you to do is to push forward a presumption to shared parenting, to make the courts answerable for the decisions they're making. Very often, they are ignoring what we believe to be a presumption to shared parenting, which is contained within the Children's Act. So few fathers are given shared parenting, and as we represent pretty much 50% of the population, you know, one has to wonder why it is that we always end up as the person being penalised, paying through the nose,
okay,
to get a few hours a week with our kids.
Okay, Ron. Thank you for that. Can I just ask you one question before I answer? I mean, presumably you had a court order at some point that gave you access.
Eventually, after 2 years, I got an order granting me access.
Right.
Mother ignored it, and I was broke, distraught, my life was in tatters.
Right, and you had to go back to court in order to enforce the access then?
It made me so ill I couldn't do it. I had to leave it for 2 years.
Right, I see.
I've recently taken it back to court.
Well, I mean, you know, I know this is a very live and important issue for many fathers. I mean, fortunately, 9 out of 10 cases get sorted without all the bother. But obviously, in cases where there's a strong contest about access, then there's got to be a way of dealing with this that is fair. But I take the point that you're making, which is that the court should approach this with a presumption that there should be equal access unless there is a reason not to do so. And if I may, I will get back to you. I'd just like to have a look a little more closely myself on exactly how the courts are supposed to approach it now, and perhaps I can then write to you about that if you would allow me to.
Thank you, Ron, for your call. Tony Blair is talking with London here at LBC 97.3. We're looking for your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions on 0870 9090973. Tony.
Right, OK, and now we're going to Jane in Battersea.
Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Jane.
I'd just like to say, on the case of weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
They're here on our streets. They're not in Iraq. They're destroying our young children and society. As we know our streets on London, the quality of life just isn't there anymore. The crime rate's up. And it's just terrible. If some of the energies that were put in, it's commendable that you care about the Iraqi people and you went to war, but what about us? The drug money is funding Al-Qaeda. Why can't some energies that was put into Iraq be put into this country to stop these filthy drugs from getting onto our streets and corrupting our children, our society? Our children aren't replaceable.
Okay, Jane, that's a very fair point. I totally agree there's a huge menace of hard drugs on our street. Let me just tell you a couple of things that we're doing and then I'll ask you a question if I might. First of all, we're increasing and have increased actually already, but are increasing further the sentences for dealers in hard drugs. Secondly, there are a whole series of measures that will come into force in the next few months which will make it easier to get convictions for such people, because we will be able to take into account previous convictions in an easier way, and there will be better rules on disclosure of evidence that can help balance up or rebalance our criminal justice system in favour of prosecuting the people properly who are guilty of such things. There's only one question I'd just like to ask you, and it's this, that one of the questions that we ask in the course of this is whether it is right, not merely that we end up with these tougher sentences in respect of hard drug dealers, but that we also make sure that within our criminal justice system, anybody who is arrested and tested positively for drugs, that there is a presumption that they do not get bail unless they're prepared to get drug treatment. And that's one of the things that we're looking at.
Yes, but I also know the rehab treatment centres that you have at the moment, the ones I know about, there's a lot of corruption in them, and the people aren't really getting the treatment that it's just...
Right. I mean, we're aware of that, which is one of the reasons why we're changing the way that those centres and the system works. But if we could do that, I mean, if we could, in other words, provide that there was genuine and proper treatment for such people, and in addition to that, that if they refused to take the treatment, they faced a penalty within the criminal justice system, is that something you would support?
Well, I would, and also deportation as well of people that aren't, you know...
People who've come from abroad and are dealing
abroad,
in drugs,
yes.
Here. Yeah, okay, well, I totally agree with that.
Jane, thank you for your call very much indeed. Please keep them coming. We have another half an hour of the Prime Minister here on LBC 97.3. Your thoughts, your suggestions, 0870 9090973.
If Helen owes 3 weeks and Paul owes 1 week, but Trish owes Helen 2 weeks and Trish is on holiday next week, how much does Helen owe Paul? The answer? Your syndicate manager. If you run a lottery syndicate, simply download your syndicate manager to your PC. It checks all your syndicate's numbers every week, and it keeps tabs on who's paid what and when. If you want to start up a syndicate, just log on to nationallottery.co.uk or call 0845 91000. Players must be 16 or over. Games, rules and procedures apply.
Want to ski low cost? Then why not hit the slopes with EasyJet? Fly low cost to the Alps or the Pyrenees with daily flights to Lyon, Munich, Geneva, Milan and now Toulouse. All with our famous low fares starting from just $22.99 single. With so much choice, we've even given you an online guide to resorts, accommodation and the latest snow reports. So what are you waiting for? Book online now at EasyJet.com. EasyJet, the web's favourite airline. Conditions apply.
Good morning, class.
Good morning, Miss Anderson.
Richard?
Here, miss.
Susan?
Here, miss.
Catherine?
Here, miss.
Bob?
Present, miss.
Do you have a note regarding your absence, Bob?
No, miss. I had to fix my daughter's wardrobe.
If you don't fancy going back to school, try your local Learn Direct Centre.
You can get a national maths or English qualification, the same level as a GCSE, by taking a short test in a friendly, supportive environment. When you pass, you'll get a certificate in adult numeracy or literacy. It's recognised by employers, you can do it for free, and when you're free. Call 08080 200 800 for your nearest centre.
Thank you, Bob. Do you do plumbing?
Tiscali Broadband is so tempting. It's like this enormous cream cake. The gallons of cream, it's the free modem, the chucky sprinkles, the completely free setup, and the cherry on top. The fantastic price of just $15.99 a month. Tiscali Broadband is up to three times faster than standard dial-up. And with free modem and free setup, you can have your cake and eat it. Call 0800 107 9000 or visit tiscali.co.uk. Requires BT line in Tiscali Broadband area. Minimum contract and conditions apply.
LBC 97.3.
Call Tony Blair now. 0870 9090973.
Right, this is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3, taking your calls until 11 on 0870 9090973. And we're going to Tom in Bromley.
Morning, Prime Minister.
Good morning, Tom.
I'd like to talk to you about the government's stance on drugs, in particular cannabis. As a parent, I'd like to ask you to think again and not downgrade this drug and to give the strongest possible message, particularly to teenagers, that the government is totally opposed to its use.
Well, first of all, Tom, I think it's important to understand what we actually are and are not doing, and I know there's been some confusion about this.
Yes.
Cannabis remains an illegal drug, and people can be arrested for its use, and the police retain their powers in respect of it. What we have done, and in part in response to pressure from people who want us to concentrate on hard drugs, is to give the police a greater flexibility in how they deal with cannabis so that they can get after the hard drugs. But I agree we must not risk in doing that sending a message to people that actually somehow we're downgrading the importance of the crackdown on drugs in general.
Yes, I think that the unfortunately the steps that you're taking are misinterpreted by youngsters, and they seem to think that it is receiving government approval in some way. That message really needs to be hammered home, because it's at the teenage stage. And I was listening to a program on LBC the other day when quite a few people who were heavy users of cannabis were describing their psychosis that resulted in one or two cases, and that there is therefore evidence that it can be damaging.
Yeah.
And I know my own teenage daughter has said to me, that, you know, well, the government thinks it's okay.
Yeah, well, I think the point you're making is right. It is extremely important that in making sure the police concentrate on the work they're doing on the hard drugs, we do not send the wrong message. And let me make it absolutely clear, cannabis remains illegal, and people who use it, if they think they use it and they see a police officer and they're doing something that is not illegal, they're wrong. It is illegal. And the police retain the power to prosecute people in respect of it. Okay, many thanks, Tom, for that, because I think it is important we make that clear for people. And now we're going to move to the next call, which I think is Stephanie from Barnet.
Hello, good morning, Prime Minister.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to ask you about the government and the DVLA stance on the checking of foreign licensed cars. Now, I've seen numerous Polish, Czech and other Eastern European cars on London streets bearing their country of origin's license plates. These are legal, driven across Europe, cars that obviously the occupants are either legally working in the UK or they're here for an extended visit, not just a holiday. But these cars don't have UK tax discs. They're being driven possibly with no UK company-based insurance, although they might obviously be insured in their home country. They look tatty. I have a concern about the MOT tests around Europe. The tests abroad might not be as stringent as ours with regards to braking systems, emissions. I'd like to see cars belonging to foreign nationals working legally in the UK subjected to UK MOT and road fund tax, and I believe at the moment they're not.
Okay. Well, Stephanie, I'd like to look into that, if I might. I mean, I suppose there will be an issue as to the extent to which we want to harmonise this across Europe, because we might want to retain our own ability to decide these things. But I totally understand what you're saying is there are people who are here that are actually, as it were, living and working here, and who've got their cars that are taxed and checked and MOT'd under a different regime, and that regime may not be stringent enough.
That's right. I mean, for example, if you take, let's say an au pair or somebody who's come from the building trade in one of the Eastern European new EEC member countries,
Yeah.
They may drive a car across Europe. They may legally have permission to work in this country, but their car is not taxed on British roads. Their insurance is only valid in their home country. If an Indigenous national of the UK has an accident with these people, where do they stand? And also, who is paying for the upkeep of the roads? These people, if you like, are driving for free on our roads.
Okay. That's a perfectly reasonable point. I'd like to look into it, though, and get back to you, because I'm not sure, I sort of feel there must be some way of dealing with these within our present system if they're actually living and working here for long periods of time. But let me come back and to you with the answer on that. If I might, I'll have to get back to you by sort of email or letter. But if you leave your details, I will do that, because it seems to be a perfectly reasonable point to make. Okay, right. This is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3. You've got another 20 minutes or so to call me on 0870 9090 973. And let's talk now to Andrew from Harrow.
Your call is important to us.
Well, these things periodically, Prime Minister, happen in radio. If you'd like to speak to Tony Blair, he is here at LBC 97.3 talking with London. And the number you need is 0870 9090 973. It's 0870 9090 973. Tony.
Right, so apparently we temporarily lost Andrew from Harrow, but we're going to Tony from Crystal Palace. Tony.
Hi there, Mr. Blair.
Good morning.
My suggestion would be regarding state schools, to be perfectly honest. We've got to actually make the levels of teaching a lot higher. You know, the standards have got to be brought up. And I think we've got to stop this business where we have other people coming from other countries to teach our children where their language, obviously, English is second. We need to put money into getting our own homegrown teachers and getting the standards up there with these private schools and various other sort of bits and pieces that are going on.
Well, I think it's absolutely right that we've got to make sure we raise the school standards. I mean, I should just say to you, one of the reasons why we bring in foreign teachers for London in particular is that we've had teacher training shortages for a number of years. I'm pleased to say, however, there are a lot more people going into teacher training now, and we're giving various incentives for them to do so. And I hope the situation will ease. I mean, it's particularly difficult in London because there's such a pressure on employment, and particularly on housing as well. And what we're also trying to do is to make sure that key workers in teaching and, for example, in nursing, where also we've got problems recruiting people and are having to recruit people from abroad as a result, that we're also giving some help to those people with housing costs, because that's a big reason why it's difficult to get people, to come and teach it in places like London. But we are trying to do this. And I just say to you, in London, actually, school standards are rising. We've still got a way to go, but they are actually rising. And our teachers now in this country are probably amongst the best paid in Europe, at least, although, again, there's still a long way we've got to go.
As I say, I think we've got to pay our own homegrown teachers a lot more money. I watched my daughter go through one class last year.
Sorry, Tony, are you there? Have we lost you? I think we may have lost you, actually.
But I think we got through a lot of ground there. Tony Blair, our Prime Minister, is here at LBC 97.3 this morning, taking your calls on 0870 90 90973.
Right, and now we're over to Peter from Chelsea. I'm sorry about that, Tony from Crystal Palace, but Peter from Chelsea.
Good morning, Mr. Blair.
Good morning.
I just would like to ask you about your immigration policies, because somebody like me, who's a honest, hard-working, law-abiding person who works long hours every day, and he used to be quite a liberal person, has turned into an angry and bitter, bigoted person now, because all I see is people coming in, taking council houses, living on free money, and it just really, really angers me and loads of people that I work with. What is going to be done on this? Are you going to start deporting people?
Okay, well, let me tell you what we are doing, Peter. I think it's important also to balance this on the basis of what actually is happening now. I mean, the problem really has arisen in relation to asylum seeking. I mean, actually, in respect of immigration as a whole, The immigration laws are strict. People who come in usually with a work permit because they're actually going to work, and there are all sorts of rules that we can impose in those circumstances. The problem has arisen particularly in relation to asylum seeking, because people were coming into this country in significant numbers claiming asylum when actually they were economic migrants. Now, what we've done, we have actually been working on this for the past 2 to 3 years, and we have put in new legislation, new frontier controls in France. We're introducing further legislation again in this forthcoming session of Parliament. The numbers actually claiming asylum now, today, are around about half of what they were a year ago, and they're still falling. We need to get them down further, and the number of people that we are deporting once their asylum claim has failed is significantly up. Now, I'm not saying there's not still a way to go, but please believe me when I say this is not an issue that we have been ignoring. We are working on it. But let me just explain to you what the difficulty is with instantly deporting someone once their asylum claim fails. The difficulty is you have to have a country to deport them back to, and the country will only accept them if they got proper documentation, and sometimes that takes time to do. That's the difficulty about deportation. But we are working on that as well. And all I can tell you is, I know it makes people angry. It's important to get it in context as a problem. It is a problem. We are dealing with it. And I think the measures that we're about to introduce, although some of them are very controversial, will deal with it still further.
But I don't know if you can understand, but racial or bigoted attacks are going to be on the increase because people are getting so angry. Unless you have one of these bedsits or houses full of bedsits right next door to you, you don't know what it's like when you're paying private rent and you're paying over the odds for rent and you're working hard and you see people getting all this for free.
Well, I understand the problem is exactly for that reason that we've introduced the measures that we've introduced, and there are more measures on the way. And all I can say to you is, whereas a year ago we had something like 8,000 to 9,000 of these claims every month, they're now down to less than 3,500, and they're still falling. Now, I agree there's still more to do, but I can assure you of one thing. We have not been simply sitting back and twiddling our thumbs and not bothering about it. We've been trying to change the system, and this is not a problem, incidentally, that's just peculiar to Britain. It's happening not just over Europe, all over Europe, but all over the world, as you get masses of people migrating in favour of a better economic standard of life. Now, there have been these abuses of the asylum system, and I know it's a real issue out there, and all I'm saying to you is I understand the anger, but we are responding to it.
Peter in Chelsea, thank you for your call. The station that's giving you this opportunity to talk with our Prime Minister, Tony Blair, this morning is LBC 97.3. Tony.
Right, this is Tony Blair on LBC 97.3. More of your calls after the travel with Natalie Bailey.
We can see on our motorway cameras that the clockwise M25 very slow moving from Junction 13 at Staines in toward Junction 14 at Heathrow as you head through those roadworks. Of course, do bear in mind, this is just the start of the roadworks. They're going to be in for the next 2 years. So you've got a couple more months left at least of that disruption to continue. Heading westbound on the North Circular, very slow moving from Neasden in toward the Hanger Lane Duratory. Looking on the London Underground, I'm afraid no change, no Bakerloo line between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wilston, and delays on the Piccadilly and Central Lines. LBC 97.3 Travel. Next update in half an hour.
Travel with Bshaw.com. Bringing you cheaper car insurance online. LBC.
Why come off a channel crossing into port?
When you can come off onto motorway. With a journey time of just 35 minutes from Folkestone to Calais Coquelles, Eurotunnel is the quickest way to get you and your car to France. And the terminal exit leads straight onto the motorway. For a faster way into France, just visit Eurotunnel.com or call 08705 35 35 35. Eurotunnel. Inspiring possibilities.
Good morning, class.
Good morning, Miss
Richard?
Here, Miss.
Susan?
Here, Miss.
Catherine?
Here, Miss.
Bob?
Present, Miss.
Do you have a note regarding your absence, Bob?
No, Miss. I had to fix my daughter's wardrobe.
If you don't fancy going back to school, try your local Learn Direct Centre. You can get a national maths or English qualification, the same level as a GCSE, by taking a short test in a friendly, supportive environment. When you pass, you'll get a certificate in adult numeracy or literacy. It's recognised by employers, you can do it for free, and when you're free. Call 08080 200 800 for your nearest centre.
Thank you, Bob.
Do you do plumbing?
Kids making a racket, boy bands versus computer games. Sometimes being at home is just as much pressure as being at work. Especially with the pressure pain of blocked sinuses on top of it all. It's just one pressure too many.
So,
Get Lemsip Max Sinus Capsules with a max strength painkiller and decongestant to help release you from pressure pain and unblock your sinuses. You'll still have the family to deal with, but then you've always managed to do that. Lemsip Max, because life doesn't stop. Always read the label.
Want to ski low cost? Then why not hit the slopes with EasyJet? Fly low cost to the Alps or the Pyrenees with daily flights to Lyon, Munich, Geneva, Milan and now Toulouse. All with our famous low fares starting from just $22.99 single. With so much choice, we've even given you an online guide to resorts, accommodation and the latest snow reports. So what are you waiting for? Book online now at EasyJet.com. EasyJet, the web's favourite airline. Conditions apply.
LBC 97.3.
Call Tony Blair now.
0870-9090-973.
Right, this is Tony Blair here taking your calls on LBC 97.3. Call me now on 0870-9090-973. And we go first to Sam in Knightsbridge.
Hi, Prime Minister.
Hello.
I'm a British citizen of Iraqi origin. Point I'd like to make is, firstly, I feel that we have been misled in going into Iraq, as I think many people do in this country. But the point that I wanted to make, now that we are in Iraq, I would expect us to have a moral responsibility of taking a lead role in changing the system there, the system being recovering the infrastructure of Iraq, and not having an elected government until we have done that and moved out of there. Because I think all that will happen if we go in and have an elected government before the US and American troops leave, is there's going to be a great deal of skepticism, rightly so, from the people of Iraq and the people outside here, of how much involvement we will have in any government and any system that is set up there.
Okay, Sam, look, I won't enter into the argument about whether people misled or not, because your question is really about the administration in Iraq, and obviously I've got different views on that. But the important thing is to realise that we're actually trying to rebuild Iraq now, and indeed there are something like 17,000 different construction projects underway in Iraq now, and the whole of Iraq, as I saw for myself when I was there 10 days ago, is being transformed. Now, it's going to be difficult because we've still got a security problem with previous supporters of Saddam and various assorted foreign terrorists that are there, but I can assure you we are going to stay and get the job done. Now, in the end, obviously we want to move to a situation where Iraq is a democratic country, and that will be the first time that Iraqis are able to choose their own government and choose them in the way that they want. But I can assure you we are not going to walk away from this situation. And if Iraq goes right, as I hope it does, the impact on the whole of the Middle East will be enormous and beneficial.
Is your intent to have an elected government before American and US troops pull out?
Well, what we've done is we've set out a timetable for this, and the first stage would be an Iraqi administration that will take over from the American and British administration, and that should happen at the end of June, and then at a later time you move to elections. Now, obviously we will help in whatever capacity we can, but in the end, no, we want to make sure this is turned over to the Iraqis themselves, but we shouldn't do that until the democracy is capable of functioning properly.
Sam in Knightsbridge, thank you so much for your call. This station is LBC 97.3, and we today are giving you the opportunity to put your thoughts, ideas and suggestions to our Prime Minister, Tony Blair.
Right, now we go to Kate in Wimbledon.
Hello, Tony.
Hello.
Hello. I heard recently about a movement being set up to form a Ministry of Peace. This was an idea that some people had. And when I first heard of it, I thought it was maybe a bit crackpot or a bit strange, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me. To have a group of people high up in government who are focusing on all sorts of different ways in which we can promote peace. So right down from just within small communities and within schools, right through to sort of international initiatives. So it might include things like UK schools having pen pals in Iraqi schools, or even doing exchanges in the future when it's safer. Lots of initiatives to try and get communication going to promote peace. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, I wouldn't think myself that you needed a separate ministry, because I think that could end up causing sort of confusion. But I think what is important is to try and make sure that both through the existing ministries that deal with our foreign relations, particularly obviously the Foreign Office and the Department for International Development, that we do everything we can to promote peace in the world. In fact, we are. I mean, one of the things that doesn't always get a lot of publicity, but in several of the conflicts in Africa at the moment, the British government has actually played a leading role in trying to set up a resolution of those conflicts that have killed, you know, literally millions of Africans in the past decade. And I think the idea of getting far better dialogue between school children in this country, and not just in Iraq but in other countries as well, is a very good one. I mean, we've got the technology now, so it would be a sensible idea to use it. But sometimes I think people don't always know that the amount that's going on and the amount we're doing through the UN and through other international organisations, and it might help as well if we perhaps we told people a little bit more about what we do there.
Kate, thank you for your call on the subject of peace here at LBC 97.3. Talking to our Prime Minister, here's another call.
Right, and it's Tess in Uxbridge.
Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
I have an idea to put to you regarding benefits. I believe that people who have never claimed benefit in their life, and there are many of them, my parents both included, that if they never claimed benefit, never received any benefit, why not give them a no-claims bonus at their pension, added onto their pension when the time comes for them to retire? My father started work at 16 as a miner, left the pit one day and joined the RAF the next day. And he has never, he did over 35 years service, him and many others, never claimed any benefits at all, no sickness benefit, no unemployment benefit. And now he has retired.
Right.
And has never claimed anything. And there are thousands of people like him who receive no reward. They've paid in and paid in all their working life. And
right.
Nothing back, basically.
Okay, well, I understand the point, Tess. I mean, I suppose there may be millions in that situation. I mean, the question would be who would pay the no-claims bonus?
But are there not many more who are actually sat there not doing anything and being rewarded for doing so? Where there are, like you say, probably millions. But why should they keep paying in and paying in and paying in for those who do not want to go out and work, who do not want to do anything, who think this country owes them a living?
I totally understand the point, Tess. Although, if you introduced a no-claims bonus, if you gave a sum of money to people who never claimed benefit, I mean, that money itself would have to come from somewhere. So you'd have to watch how you funded such a thing. That's all. But anyway, I'll certainly think about it. I mean, I think in the end, the main thing is to say to people who are on benefit but could work, we will offer you a job, but your obligation is to take it or you don't get the benefit. Now, that is actually what we're trying to do with the New Deal for the Unemployed. And that's the reason why we've got many fewer people on benefit now. But I totally understand the point, and I'll think about it. But I've got a feeling it's got quite a large cost to it. Okay, Tess, many thanks for that. And then Barry in Holloway.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Blair.
Good morning.
Hello. Well, you're asking for suggestions. My suggestion is that when you eventually hand over the reins to somebody else, that you consider taking a job as an LBC phone-in presenter.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. I mean, I'm glad you said the word eventually. Otherwise, you might be suggesting it should happen any time soon.
Well, I'll tell you why I say that. I mean, I've been listening to you, and you really do, unlike some other presenters on other stations, of course, you really listen to the callers and you really respond to them.
Well, that's very kind of you to say it. Actually, the most interesting thing, you know, part of the problem with politics is that you very rarely get the chance to interact with people on a genuine basis. And one of the advantages of doing something like this is that you actually listen and hear what people are saying. So anyway, many thanks. It's very kind of you to say that to me, and I'll bear it in mind. What's the pay like here, Howard?
It's excellent, Prime Minister. But the tax levels may be a little high. But the pay's absolutely
right.
Fine.
We'll take that as another suggestion.
But I know you'll take
Howard,
that one away with
for you. The big conversation. Okay, this is Tony Blair, and I think I've got to say now, thank you very much for listening to my first show on LBC 97.3.
Prime Minister, I think we all believe that you did fantastically well, and I think you do have a career in broadcasting, but you've got lots of other things to do at the moment, I think. Now, we've ranged through an awful lot of subjects in the last hour: peace, Iraq, foreign cars, taxes, fines, fathers' rights, immigration, and of course that idea about benefits, plus some comments on your broadcasting, which is excellent. Of all the ideas that people have been calling in with this morning, which one are you going to take away with you?
I think I'll take away more than one, actually, because there are things like making it clear that cannabis has not been made lawful that I think is actually important. You know, issues to do with the fathers and in the revenue and so on. I think the most interestingly is people's view that if you claim benefit, you should have some obligation to to do your best to get into work, you know, and that we should help people, whether it's through childcare and other ways, but it shouldn't be a something-for-nothing deal. You know, there should be something for something, and I think that's an interesting idea.
So have we given you food for thought today?
Yes, absolutely, and as I say, it's always better when you're actually talking to people direct, and it's been very enjoyable. Thank you very much.
Are those ideas that you'll take away with you, can you come back to us in 6 months and let us know how you get on?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to do that, actually. If you want to do that again, I'd be very happy to do it, because what we're trying to do is to have a genuine conversation so that we do come back and we do talk to people about, you know, whether it's whether some of these things are possible. I mean, sometimes things just have a big cost to them. So you've got to say to people, look, we'd love to do this, but we can't. But at least at the end of it, it's not that everyone will agree with us or we will agree with everyone, but at least you'll have a better understanding as to what the problems are, and that it's not that people in government are sitting there all badly motivated doing their worst for people, but it's sometimes these decisions are tough decisions. So,
Prime Minister, thank you so much on behalf of the management here and on behalf of London for making time for LBC 97.3. We'll see you in 6 months.
Thank you very much indeed. Right, that's the end of my show. And James O'Brien is next on LBC 97.3.